I wonder how confident in your relationship with Jesus you are this morning. I wonder if it's solid, beyond question. Do you have what the early Puritans referred to as assurance? That unshakable belief in the goodness of God, that saving ability of Jesus, and in that, your relationship with God is absolutely founded and solid. Or is it a little bit more shaky? A little less certain? Needing actually some reassurance that it's going to be okay. Maybe it's not even as good as shaky. Maybe you are holding on to faith by your fingertips, wondering whether you will ever have that out-and-out assurance that other people seem to be so confident with, that certainty that others seem to have that they're in the right place and that God has called them and God is using them. I wonder how your relationship with Jesus is this morning. Leads me to another series of questions. I wonder how you felt when we began with a series of reading from Psalms that were all about praise and thanksgiving. A series of songs that did the same thing. Did they help you express the thankfulness for what God has done in this week? Or did it just accentuate how difficult this past week has been? And you've wondered where God is in this. When Peter writes, he writes to a small group of dispersed churches, and he says, make every effort to add to your faith goodness, to your goodness knowledge, to your knowledge self-control, to self-control perseverance, to perseverance godliness, to godliness mutual affection, and to mutual affection love. For if you possess these qualities in increasing measure, they will keep you from being effective and unproductive in your knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. And then he says something interesting. He urges these small group of Christians to make their calling and election sure. It's almost as if he's saying, you're going to have to work at it. Today, some people might say, you need to fake it until you make it. Or perhaps in a more spiritual way, you might want to quote from Brother Lawrence, who talks about practicing the presence of God. However, there's a danger here. Because it's almost as if Peter were advocating a gospel works, if not a gospel works, a spirituality that is all about working about it. It's all about discipline. It's what Richard Foster might describe as the celebration of discipline. It's almost as Peter is saying, you can do enough to ensure your relationship is right with Jesus in the way you control your emotions, how you live your lifestyle. I think there's something to this. What we know is the fruits of the Spirit or the spiritual disciplines are to be practiced. If our relationship with Jesus is to be kept vibrant, and if we are to maintain our good spiritual health. But while I think there's something to this, while I think there's something about faith, goodness, self-control, perseverance, godliness, mutual affection that we can practice so that they become more a part of who we are. They become a character traits that we choose to follow. We allow them to change our lives. We take that route rather than anything else. I also think there's a danger here. I think there's a danger that it become the only thing that it's about, that it's only about our effort. It's only about how we work at it. And I think Peter has much too much experience of Jesus to believe this. Believe that. Because after all, he's the one who said to Jesus, I'm never going to leave your side. I'm going to be here even if everybody else goes. He would stay with Jesus come what may. And yet when the chips are down, And Jesus is being arrested, and he's being questioned about his Galilean accent. And people saying, you sound like those Galileans. You were with Jesus, surely. He's the first to say, no, not me. I'm not one of them. And so when Peter says, make every effort to make to add to your faith goodness, to goodness self, to goodness knowledge, to knowledge self-control, to self-control perseverance, to perseverance godliness, to godliness mutual affection, and to mutual affection love. He's only too aware of how difficult this is and how often we fall so far short. And this falling short and this self-knowledge that we fall short. This realization before God that we're never going to be perfect this side of glory. And having the courage and the humility to admit that lies at the heart of the parable that Jesus tells in Luke 18. Now, if you were here last week, you would have heard me speak about the importance of context. You would have heard me speak of how God speaks out of the context of the scriptures and speaks into the context of our lives. And you have heard me place the parable that comes before this, the parable of the unjust judge, where the woman goes and bangs on his door and keeps banging until she gets her way. You would have heard me set this in the context of the Lord coming, the coming of the kingdom in Luke 17. But there's also a crossover here, because when Luke introduces that parable, he says it's about the persistence of prayer, and it leads nicely in to this second parable that begins at Luke 18, verse 9. Because as in these first 18 verses, Luke sees the paints for us a picture of a persistent woman, and then and you would almost see something of that in Peter's persistency in working out the spiritual disciplines of goodness and self-control, of mutual affection and of love. And then we come to the next stage, recognizing who we are before God, because Jesus takes the persistence a stage further in telling this next parable. And in this respect, there was more, deliberately more, as you can imagine, to us using a series of extracts from the Psalms that were praise Psalms in our beginning. And the reason I wanted to do that is when you look at this parable that Jesus tells of the Pharisee and the tax collector, the words of the Pharisee are almost like a praise psalm. I give thanks. And then it changes. Because actually, the Pharisee is grateful to God, not for who God is, not for what God has done for him, not for all that God could do for him. The Pharisee is grateful to God for who he is. Or maybe even who he has become, because he has followed the training that Pharisees undertake. He is, after all, a man of God. But interestingly, in recognizing his position, the focus that he comes in prayer is not on God himself. It's actually on those who are around him. In these first few verses, the Pharisee makes himself the focus of attention. I thank you that I'm not like other people, robbers. I thank you that I'm not like other people, evildoers. I thank you that I'm not like other people, adulterers. I fast twice a week, spiritual discipline. I give tithes of all I get, spiritual discipline. And then he puts the cap on it. He says, I thank you that I'm not like other people, like this tax collector. You almost get the impression that such is his spirituality, such is his strength of assurance, such is the power of his conviction of who he is as a man of God, that actually God should be privileged that he is here offering his prayers. God should be thankful that this man has taken time to come before him in prayer. And here is the problem. The problem is that the Pharisee is only too well aware of the attributes of the godly life, in many ways has practiced them, has followed them, has worked them out, has lived by them. But even in doing so, he's missed something. And while he might feel confident in coming to the before the Lord in prayer, he probably shouldn't, which is why Jesus contrasts him with the tax collector. Now, many of you know I spent 12 years working for HMRC. 9 of those was a collector of taxes. And I will say to you, in the 21st century, the profession of collector of taxes is an honourable one. But I would say that, wouldn't I? I would say collectors of taxes are only after what is lawfully due. In the times of Jesus, it was different. In the times of Jesus, there was a good reason for disliking tax collectors, other than just the fact that you were paying taxes. In Jesus' time, much of the income generated from taxes was being shipped out of the nation to go and fund the Roman Empire. In Jesus' time, the whole of the tax system that was run by tax collectors who made their money by adding a percentage to the top, their cut on the taxes. In the time of Jesus, it was actually easy to be dishonest and to collect much more than you told people you'd collected, and just hand over a bit and blame it on those who were paying you. All in all, it's not the sort of job many people wanted to do. And so when Jesus tells a story about the Pharisee who comes, the one who's had all the spiritual disciplines and has followed them for time and time and has been shaped by them, and then when he compares this with the tax collector who is standing a bit back from the altar, the shock of that would have been immense. The Pharisee who knew he was right before God because he had followed the ways of God, and the tax collector who everybody considered to be an outcast and as such not worthy to be in the presence of God. And yet he knew it. Such was the contrast. You get the impression that God should be thankful for the Pharisee to be in the temple praying, and God should shudder in the sight of the tax collector standing before him. And yet it is almost the other way around. It's the typical Jesus thing of turning the kingdom up, everything we think, upside down. And so just as the Pharisee knew who he was, so did the tax collector. And because of that, Jesus commends him. And because of that, it's him, not the Pharisee, who goes home justified, who's made right before God. The difference between the tax collector and the Pharisee is the tax collector knew, no matter how much they did, they were needed to be put right before God. Put right in their relationship with God through the prayers they offered. Here in Luke 18, we have an example of a person who has nothing to offer and yet is being put right. And it asks a question of us. It asks a question of how we evaluate faith in ourselves and faith in others. It asks us what is important to God. What is important in the life of faith? What are the attributes of good spiritual health? Look at the opening passage of the one from 2 Peter, and it's about practicing the attributes of God: goodness, knowledge, self-control, perseverance, godliness, mutual love and affection. The things that are similar to what Paul says are the fruits of the Spirit in Galatians 5. And then you look at Luke 18, the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector, and it's about humility, recognizing who we are before God. And there's something here about recognizing both together make the complete spiritual health, practicing the spiritual disciplines, but always in the context of humility, a willingness to come before God and say, you know, things just aren't right, and I need your help to put them right. At the moment, there's an awful lot being said about mental health, a lot being said about what constitutes good mental health, and a lot being said that the beginning of good mental health is being able to talk about it. To say, I've got a problem and I need help. That courage to reach out, that humility to say, I need help. Spiritual health is similar. Well, just like ordinary health and well-being, exercise is good. The spiritual disciplines help us in good spiritual health. But we need to come alongside admitting that we can't do it all by ourselves, admitting that we need God's help. Because ultimately, good spiritual help comes from recognizing our dependence, our need of God. Recognizing the depth of his love and compassion for us, and recognizing that love and compassion is worked out, not in simply in our own isolation, but in relationship with each other. And Peter talks about calling, making our calling and election sure. It's made in the context of a church environment, a small group of believers coming together to worship and serve together, and actually learning to be church together. So if we're going to work out the spiritual attributes, knowledge, self-control, perseverance, godliness, mutual affection, love, they're worked out in relationship with others, recognizing that none of us is perfect, and having the courage to humbly admit that. Ultimately, the opening words that Peter writes is to a group of a small scattered churches, and it's sent to encourage them to press on. It's helped to give them a sense of perseverance to grow in good spiritual health. It's written to help them find that assurance that I spoke of at the very beginning. That assurance the Puritans would speak of, that assurance of the eternity with God. And in many ways, the parable Luke records in Jesus saying in Luke 18 is the counterbalance to that. It says we need to recognize no matter how good the spiritual disciplines, good spiritual health comes from a humble place before God, having the courage to say, I need help. I'm sure I've told you the story of D.L. Moody, the great 19th century evangelist. For those of you who have not heard it, he had such an encounter with God. Such a powerful encounter with God, he had to ask God to stay his hand. And he went on to an amazing ministry in the UK and in Scotland. And on one occasion, someone came to him and said, Mr. Moody, why do you keep going back to God and asking him to fill you with the Spirit when you've had such an infilling of the Spirit already? And Moody just simply replied, I leak. Good spiritual health comes from practicing the sort of spiritual attributes we find in Peter. Noting that we leak. Having the humility to say, I leak. God, forgive me. God, help me. So I'm back where I started. How is your spiritual health this morning? Is it good? Is it so good that you need to go back and be sure that you're actually right before God and not simply being conceited? Is it okay? but would benefit from the practice of the spiritual attributes in 2 Peter? Would it help going to God saying, do you know, I need some help here because I leak? Or are you hanging on to faith by your fingertips and just need to go to God and say, help me? I wonder, how is your spiritual health this morning? The one thing I do know is, however good or poor spiritual health is, going before God saying, help me, is the start of improving it. And so I'm left wondering if we have the humility and the courage to take that step. I wonder. Amen.